Brother John.
Good morning, Jerry.
Got my shirt on.
I put mine on yesterday. I figured that if I put it on yesterday, in case a senior moment happened today, I would be prepared.
That's not a bad idea. Go to sleep in your clothes in general is my attitude, if you want to know.
It does come in handy when you have a little hiccup in the old brain.
And not just that, but I mean, let's just face it, you know, our dress code these days is pretty damn relaxed.
Yeah, I would have to agree with you in that regard. So, enjoying a postcard perfect day as my neighborhood is being converged with 2 million people for the air and water show. Heard a few planes buzz by, so it's happening out there on the lake about 2 blocks away. So if you do hear a plane go by, just duck.
Yeah, exactly. And we might be able to hear a little of that on here. We'd be able to hear the presence of the military-industrial complex at its best.
The flybys and all that good stuff, yeah.
Blue Angels.
We have a good Blue Angels, paratroopers, you name it. It's all happening here.
Okay, so one little piece of a little bit of T-shirt business. Everyone knows how great the T-shirts are, but guess what? There's a special edition T-shirt that everybody's got to get because it's going to end on the 28th, 27th, I think. Yeah, 27th of August, Sunday, the 27th. No more. It gets cut off. So this is a T-shirt commemorating our live appearance at the Clark Street Ale House in Chicago. It's going to be a big event.
So big. Yeah, this is a limited edition collector's item commemorating with a nice acknowledgement of our host, the Clark Street Ale House, on the shirt with the date. So you will be part of it if you are unable to come down to the Ale House and see us. At least the shirt will remind you. And, of course, when you listen to the podcast, eventually, whatever, it'll all be good.
Yes, I totally agree. It'll be great. And, you know, it's, of course, a beautiful T-shirt. We've got three colors this time. We've got a gunmetal gray, which is actually, I think, called heavy metal or something. We've got a black, which is that's like a, we went back to our original T-shirt color. That was, black was our original.
Yeah.
And then we got the blue that we're sporting now with the most recent of our Bro Show T-shirts. But this one's special. It's cool. You got to go see it. shirt.thebro.show. You go there and you can get one of those. We're trying to get 50 T-shirts sold by Sunday the 27th. So you guys got to help us spread the word, you know.
Yep.
Doesn't matter if you don't listen to the podcast. Doesn't matter if you don't go to the Ale House. This is big stuff. This is going into our, there it is. I can hear Blue Angel.
Yep.
This is going into our fund, you know, our bucket list / help fight the cancer fund. This cancer is expensive, I can just tell you. So.
Yep. So all to a good cause, no doubt about it. So word is you're going to be hitting Chicago sometime this week. I don't know if Chicago's ready for you or not.
Oh, me? Little old me?
Yeah, a little old you. you know, I was thinking about the Chicago 7 conspiracy back during the Democratic Convention, and I thought, why wasn't it called the Chicago 8?
That's right.
Shouldn't you have been a part of that?
I was in spirit. I was in spirit, of course. You know what I was doing when that was going on? I was bailing one of my employees out of jail for firebombing a building on the U of I campus.
Well, you would have been right there with the best of them here in Chicago. No doubt about it, back in 1968.
You had a good crew. That's for sure.
Yeah, okay, it was an interesting time. So we got what we're doing is we're going to give a little preview here of we are going to be going to the August 20. What date would that be?
The
24th. The concert where Green Day will be coming for the first time to Wrigley Field to perform. And we're going to have an opportunity. We're going to get a chance we will be there.
We're going to be there. It just matter how there we're going to be.
We'll be there in spirit, in clear consciousness, and with clarity and excitement. They're actually going to have a warm-up band, Brit Award-winning rockers Catfish and the Bottlemen at Wrigley. It all starts at 7 o'clock, and so it's going to be a big-time thing. Now, what I'd like to do is just maybe give a little bit of background on. So most people say Wrigley Field. Wait a minute, they play baseball there. They don't do concerts there.
Oh, well, I got to interrupt you. I got to interrupt you right there, John.
Why?
I got to start on my second triple, and when I open it up, it makes a lot of noise. I think it's these triple lattes that I really like.
Well, you in the air show. Go ahead.
Hold on. Okay. Go ahead.
So Wrigley Field is kind of a historic baseball park, second oldest in the major leagues to the Fenway Park. It was built and opened in 1914. Cubs moved in 1916. So it's considered, you know, one of the classics. It's a classic ballpark. There's only two of them standing, Wrigley and Fenway. So the fact is that it's been through a fair amount of change. And what I'd like to do is talk more in terms of not the baseball stuff, but more of the history of some of the things that have happened there outside the baseball. And I guess one of the things that makes Wrigley kind of unique, and we'll get an opportunity.
Wait! I gotta stop you, dude. Outside of baseball, what is there that's outside of baseball? I'm confused.
Football.
Whoa! Good point. Okay, go ahead.
I mean, I might as well just jump in and let you know.
I thought everything could be connected to baseball, so I can't comprehend outside baseball. But I'll.
The thing is that this ballpark actually was the host to more NFL football games than any other NFL venue prior to 2003. So
okay.
Prior to 2003, if you could win a beer on a bet by asking the question, what venue has hosted the most NFL football games? Because you see, from 1921 to 1969, Wrigley Field was the home of the Chicago Bears.
Well, it seems to me that it's connected to baseball then.
Well, yeah, I mean, they had to put these stripes on the field. It's on the same field, and it's a sport. I will also give you some of my personal experiences watching football at Wrigley. Not quite as glamorous as going to watch the Bears. Mm. I was going to point out a couple of the interesting features of Wrigley that I kind of First thing is, they are the only ballpark that has no padding on the outfield walls.
Oh.
Instead of padding, what they've got is they got this green stuff called ivy that was originally planted by Bill Veeck in 1937. And that's when he was working for his father, who happened to be the president of the Chicago Cubs. So that means that these stupid outfielders who think they can run into that soft ivy are going to survive, don't realize that there's hard bricks right behind it. Of course, they should be able to figure out what to do. There is still what's called a warning track there to remind you that you're getting close to the wall. So when you have a ballpark as old as Wrigley, going back to 1914, of course, there's a need to perhaps have renovation, not only in terms of, making it look better, but also the infrastructure. So the current owners, the Ricketts family, they're billionaires who own a company called Ricketts? What's wrong with Ricketts?
Wow, I'd hate to have that name.
You think of bone disease or something or what?
Yes, that's what I'm thinking.
Oh, God, I never even thought of that. I guess I'll have to start thinking about it, too.
Sorry.
But Ricketts, they're billionaires. They own a company up in Omaha called Ameritrade, and their son used to spend a lot of time with his wife at Wrigley. So they have they basically are pro Wrigley. So one of the things they made very clear when they purchased the club back in 2009, one of their goals was not only to get a World Series championship for the Cubs, but also to bring Wrigley Field up to speed so that it could continue being used as the Cubs ballpark for many, many years to come. So it's right now, starting in 2013, it's been in a big renovation, 5-year renovation that's included putting scoreboards out there, which personally, even as much as I am like a reactionary, I love the additional information we're getting in terms of the ball game and the way that they've done it. They got a video board. A lot of people, you know, complained about it. But as far as I'm concerned, it's worked out. Now, one of the things that's interesting about Wrigley, it's in a neighborhood called Wrigleyville. It's part of Chicago. And so there's been extensive negotiations between the city and the Cubs in order to try to give and take and figure out what exactly the Cubs are allowed to do. And so originally the Cubs said, why don't you give us a bunch of give us a subsidy and so that we can, you know, make all these wonderful renovations that are going to make our ballpark and all the fans in Chicago will really appreciate it. And our mayor Rahm Emanuel and the local alderman Tom Tunney said, take a walk, we are not going to give you dime one. And so that was good. I mean, that's, you know, the constituents I think appreciated that. And so the Cubs came back and said, fine, if you don't want to give us anything, that's okay, but we don't try to constrain our efforts in trying to squeeze every penny we can out of what we're going to put into this ballpark. So signage, you know, additional revenue from you know, from that advertising, etc., was put up there. So they've kind of done a give and take. And so what's happened is that the Cubs have used a very aggressive business approach in order to try to stay, but also within the constraints of the traditionalism of the park. And they've done a reasonably good job. I mean, they wouldn't be a business if they didn't push the city as hard as they could to get what they want. One of the things that that I included what they've done is they made a palatial players' locker room so the players now can, you know, lay around and play their video games and watch themselves. You know, the last time they swung, they can come back in the clubhouse and take a look at video. They can, you know, it's incredible. So, I mean, the ball players have been...
They have conjugal visits.
Oh, I don't know if there's those rooms. You know what? I haven't had a tour of the ballpark. I've never had a tour of the ballpark, and you can't get tours. Now, well, you know, when you've been to a ballpark over 1,000 times, as I have, it just seemed to me that, I guess, you know what, I actually was going to have a tour when I had maybe some of our family come up, but it just never came to be.
You've got a brother coming up.
Oh, would you, you know what, we might be able to arrange a tour. You'll probably, after being a Wrigley is one time, you might say, I think I've had enough of this place. But that's okay. We'll see if that works okay into it. Now, so Wrigley Field, what they've done is tried to restore on the outside some of the original splendor while putting a few of the common conveniences you see in the ballpark. I think one of the amazing things, and here's a way you can win a bet too, and that is Wrigley Field right now holds more people than the ballpark that the White Sox use on the south side. And it used to be just the opposite, but the White Sox decided to kind of make their ballpark a little smaller, so they cut out seats. While Wrigley is trying to increase the revenue, so they extended the bleachers out. They've added seats wherever they can find them, to the extent that they now hold over 41,000, while the ballpark down on the south side only holds 40. So I think that was kind of interesting, too. One of the other controversies that took place back in the 80s was lights.
Oh, yeah.
At the old ballpark.
We've talked
and
about this
so
before.
Wrigley Field was the last major league ballpark to install lights. The first game
they wanted
took place
to during World War II, though, but they weren't allowed.
That's correct. I'm glad you remember some of our previous podcasts where we've talked about the fact that on the Major League Baseball had scheduled meetings for December 8th, 1941, in which one of the items on the agenda was to approve the installation of lights at Wrigley Field. Well, this little event called Pearl Harbor took place the day before. And so as a result, they felt that some of the materials that were going to be used in order to do those lights might be put to better use for our war efforts. So it was decided not to put the lights on. And eventually the owner said, you know what, I like day baseball more than night baseball. But it's kind of interesting on what force fed the lights to take place. And the ball club never wanted lights.
Right.
Major League Baseball forced them. What happened is during the 60s and 70s, the Cubs were doormats of the National League. They weren't even in contention. They weren't close to a World Series except for 69. They got reasonably close. And then all of a sudden in the 80s, they became good. And when they became good, they became a possibility of having postseason. And with postseason, Major League Baseball said, look, guys, we televise postseason at night. If you're not going to get lights, we're going to take your games and we're going to play them down in St. Louis. And that scared the hell out of them. I thought, oh, no.
Yeah.
Immediately.
Yeah. I don't want to hear that.
They started working on trying to get lights. And by 1988, in fact, I went to the first game, 8-8-88. And that year was a year where there was very little rain in Chicago. And that night, the game was postponed due to rain after three innings when just the clouds broke open and God was saying there should not be night baseball in Wrigley.
Hey, that is true. And, you know, that just goes to show you, Aiders got an eight.
Yep.
Little eight joke there. All eights.
Yeah.
Nothing but eights.
Very little. But that's beside the point.
Volume. I work on volume.
Right? You go for volume. Yeah, rather than
not quality.
Quantity rather than quality. You went to the Dayton, what was his name?
Dayton Allen.
The Dayton Allen School of Joke Telling. If you tell enough jokes, one of them is going to be funny.
Yes, that is correct. You are correct, sir. Isn't that what he said?
Oh, yes.
He had a trademark. Anyway, pray continue about your talk about Wrigley Field, not including sports necessarily.
No, just a couple more points. A lot of times people say, well, the wind blows out of Wrigley Field. There's a lot of home runs, this or that. Hey, I did get baseball in it. And sure enough, it's an urban myth because the wind actually blows out probably a third of the time. Most of the time, it's a pitcher's park with the wind blowing in. And that's particularly in the early months of the season when you freeze your ass off if you go out to the ballpark.
Right.
So, just one other thing. I did mention to you about football. Let's see if there's something. Oh, yeah, we talked about lights. Football. No longer Bears. Bears play at Soldier Field.
Yes,
they do.
If you
want to go see the Bears, you got to go down and see them at the, you know, in Grant Park. But the Chicago Cubs have signed up a partnership agreement with Northwestern University to play some games, including football and baseball at Wrigley. I had the so back in 2010, they scheduled a Northwestern Illinois football game at Wrigley Field, and I thought, man, I've got to be there. Being a Northwestern graduate, I just said, this is an event I've got to go to. So
you do.
I got the tickets. My tickets were located on one end, but they were reasonably good. 3 days before the event, somebody decided to take a look at the field and determined that the end zone that was closest to me was not safe because it was too close to the wall. So therefore, all the plays, offensive plays, would have to go one direction. So that meant that once the ball, you know, they decided who had the ball on a punt or this or that, they just turned around and went one direction. So guess, of course, little old me, where was I sitting? I was sitting in near the wrong end zone. I was sitting in the end zone where there was no action, although that didn't keep an interception from them running in and getting a touchdown in that end zone. So that took place.
Oh, my God.
But to offset it was back in 2013. I had an opportunity in April to go out and watch the Northwestern Wildcats play baseball against the University of Michigan. And I saw the Wildcats win the game 4-0, an incredibly pitched game by the manager of the Boston Red Sox, John Farrell's son, Luke, who is currently in the minor leagues, pitched a 4-0 complete game, 9 strikeout, no walk, shutout, probably the best game I saw played all year. So, now let's get down to using this as an entertainment venue for these various concerts. Since 2005, Wrigley Field has now, as another way, means by which the club can make revenue, has decided to use Wrigley Field as a venue for concerts. And so starting back in 2005 with Jimmy Buffett, we've had a wide variety of people, anywhere from the Dave Matthews Band, Paul McCartney, Jim Billy Joel's been here like 5 times, Pearl Jam. Lady Gaga's going to come the day after Green Day. There's been Elton John's been here, AC/DC. And it's kind of, again, you know, you can imagine holding concerts in the middle of a neighborhood that has had its moments of controversy, particularly, I guess, a band I don't know much about them, but they must make a lot of noise called AC/DC.
Yeah, these all lightweight bands, all these bands.
These are all lightweight bands. They, you know what? They think they've had complaints up to this point. Wait till Thursday night. We'll see some real complaints.
Oh, I hope so. I hope so. Well, tell me about Wrigley Field, Wrigleyville, the area around there. That's kind of a controversial area too, isn't it?
Well, you know, the thing is that it's a residential area, and a lot of people, I have little, first thing is Cub fans in general, they are, believe me, and I'm going to preface by saying there are some wonderful Cub fans out there. Very knowledgeable, understand the game a lot, and most of those are smart enough to stay away from Wrigley, because Wrigley is an event place. It's a place where you go to be a part of the action, to be there in the crowd, rooting your team on, not knowing exactly what's happening out there in the field necessarily, spending more time getting up and down and going to the concession stands to feed your face with foot-long hot dogs on nacho helmets.
Nacho helmets?
Yeah, you basically buy a nacho that is, they put it into a baseball helmet.
God.
Yeah, I mean, so it's and the food there is typical ballpark fare, but that doesn't keep people from just feeding their faces and sucking down beverages, having to go to the bathroom a lot. So it's an exercise in getting up and down as you let these yahoos go back and forth, so that they can take care of things. And of course, they're not exactly what you call the neighborly, friendly type after the game. They'll then hit the 40 or 50 bars that surround Wrigleyville. They've done it before the game, they've done it afterwards, and sure enough, they find, well, many of them find their way onto the lawns of the other residents where they feel a need to relieve themselves. So there's a lot of public urination there in at Wrigleyville.
Ooh.
So you know, the fact is that Green Day is hardly a newcomer when it comes to sports venues. Earlier this year, they had an opportunity to play in their hometown, Oakland. They are strong boosters of not only their town, but also their sports teams. Members of the band have thrown out first pitches at several of the games. They're regular, you know, goers to the ballpark. They like the green and gold of the A's and are big supporters. So going back on August 2nd, they made their first tour, their first stop ever to Oakland Coliseum. Met with an enormous amount of enthusiasm. And the fact is that, you know, the Oakland A's are probably going to be the last sports team standing in Oakland, because the Golden State Warriors have already made moves to go back to San Francisco. The Oakland Raiders have already, signed to start playing in Las Vegas. And so I think Billy Joe was able to kind of rev up the audience and say, when they play their last football game here, let's burn this fucking place down.
That is, that's Billy Joe. That's my boy.
So we expect to get such, you know, wonderful comments, not necessarily about Wrigley Field, but we expect him to kind of make a few comments to kind of excite the audience a bit. And
look at the playlist. Here's the playlist.
Yeah.
Well, number one, Know Your Enemy. Number two, Bang Bang. Now, Bang Bang is important because they changed the lyrics to Bang Bang from time to time to include No Trump, No KKK, Not in the USA. So I expect we're going to get a dose of that. That's my thought.
I would say that we ought to get a lot of a little politics intermingled with the lyrics. Would be refreshing. I think it'd be good. I would thoroughly enjoy it. But I just to conclude this, they're going to finish their the U.S. part of their tour in on September 16th with another sports venue, not baseball, the Rose Bowl, and that place ought to rock. And that holds like 100,000 people. I don't know how many people they're going to get for that concert.
Wow!
But that'll be interesting. Wrigley holds 40, so it'll probably be their biggest one they've had up to this point, but a Rose Bowl ought to top that. And then after taking a little time off, they're going to head down to Rio and continue on with their tour for 2017. So you know the band better than I do. I just know the venue. Okay. So feel free to give us a little background here of, because I need, because you know I'm excited, but you can always make me more excited about being there.
Ooh. Well, I think it's going to be super exciting for some of the reasons I've already, I couldn't keep it myself. I had to let go a little of that because these guys give a hell of a show. I've watched at least 100 YouTube clips of their live concerts over the years, and they do a lot of things that are really, I think, really cool. They are definitely, as you've kind of intimated in the past minutes, John, they are a working class band, and they are a working band. These guys, no cosmetic surgery. In fact, I don't think until just this last year, Billy Joel even had any dental work done, which he needed pretty badly, actually. He had teeth and shit, you know. And poor old Mike Dirnt. Poor old Mike Dirnt. They played Woodstock in 1994. They had a big reunion concert there, and there was a big mud fight during their set. And poor old Mike Dirnt got mistaken for a mud fighter, and a security guy took him down and knocked his front teeth out. So these guys have endured a lot of injuries in the course of doing their work. Back injuries, dental dental removal in involuntary. they've been attacked. They now have extremely good security, and I'm sure we're going to get a good whiff of that when we're there. but, of course, they, in the process of pursuing their careers, they became half deaf at one point. So now they have like near the kind of cochlear implants. If you look at closely at any of the concerts, they got these things in their ears. So number one, they cannot get any more tinnitus, and they can also hear themselves and the other guys sing, so they can harmonize. So these guys are really an interesting story. They really work hard, and they've been doing this for 30 years.
Right. They're not new kids on the block here. We're talking about a group that's basically passed the test of time with flying colors.
Yeah.
A lot of time, fans come and go, but when you see a band like this that has been able to, in some ways,
stay relevant,
which means that changing to within their bounds, in other words, within what they feel is their shtick, and
exactly. They've
done a very good job of that.
I think so too. I couldn't agree more. And just so we check off the film box, because after all, we're about sports, film, and fake news. The film thing on this is one of the guys, Billy Joe Armstrong, the frontman. The major composer and the major guitar player, although he's got another guitar player now who plays with him, great guy from Little Rock, Arkansas. Billy Joe has actually done the lead in a movie called Ordinary Life. And Ordinary Life really is a wonderful, heartwarming, friendly movie. And it's very autobiographical for Billy Joe because it's about a punk rocker who never, only he didn't make it as a punk rocker, and he just ended up having an ordinary life. And he still has fantasies about doing all this stuff, and his buddies throw him a big party on his birthday because he thinks his wife has forgotten his birthday when, in fact, he didn't have the day for his birthday right. So, total fuck-up kind of guy. So it was a great little movie, and no big shakes. It's not really a great movie. It's a good movie. And I think it's a great performance for a guy who has never had his face in every frame of a movie before in his life. That's not easy to carry. That's not easy to do, but he really pulled it off. And kudos. That's pretty good. He's been in a couple other things, like Sunday Like Rain. It was the first movie I saw him in. He played the boyfriend of the female lead who treated her like shit, and she walked out on him and threw his guitar out the window, which is kind of cool. So he did a good job in that. He was an appropriate shithead in the movie, which was what he's supposed to do. And then he's also been a Nurse Jackie, which was a really dark role he had. It was kind of interesting. He was in another one where he was a ghost at a bar giving people betting tips. that was interesting too. So he's got a pretty, and also I must say that Green Day's album, American Idiot, was made into a Broadway play. Some other stuff off of Revolution Radio was added to it, like 21 Guns and I think a couple another tune. And that ended up being a real smash. That went out like a year on Broadway, and then they took it
Well
out.
over a year, Tony nominations, the whole 10 yards. But I just only comment when you say it's a good movie. Give me good movies, because great movies are often overrated. Give me good
It's a
movies.
it's a good movie. It is a good movie. He does a gr
I
well, he
like
does a
good
great job.
movies. 3 stars is better than 4 stars so many times.
Well, a lot of people gave him kudos for his performance, so that was pretty good. But I must point out about American Idiot, the Broadway play, the last month of the play, he played one of the characters, St. Jimmy, which was is a really
Nice.
cool part. And that wasn't easy. He'd never done anything like it before. He learned how to dance and sing and all kinds of stuff. And they started out as a punk rock band. That's how they got their start. But Billy Joe is like uncontrollable kind of creative force. So he had been writing and keeping track of a whole bunch of songs that didn't fit the punk rock label. And that's really what happened later in their career. I think they all got kind of tired of the punk rock genre can get limiting after a while. So they decided to expand it. And then they even decided, okay, Billy Joe says, I've got this song. I got two songs that I don't think we could do as Green Day, and I was never going to do them. But what do you guys think? And he played them two songs that have become like massively popular songs that people don't even know Billy Joe and Green Day did. And one of them is Best Time of Your Life, Friend, Good Riddance. That's in lots of movies. It's lots of people have covered, including Glen Campbell before he passed away, and he did a great job.
Very
And then
good.
the other one is Wake Me When September Ends, which everyone thought was about 9/11, but it's not. It's about when Billy Joe's father died when he was 10 years old. But again, both of these songs are kind of odd in that they really do fit the kind of punk rock darkness thing, because they're both about dark events in Billy Joe's life. Time of Your Life, that's about this girl he just couldn't get over. And so she joined the Peace Corps and couldn't put up with him anymore and left him. So he said, good riddance, have the time of your life. It was like a big FU, right? Of course, nobody sees it that way. It's a good time song. So that's kind of funny. And then the same thing with When September Ends. It's a sad song, but it's about, I just want this shit to be over, 9/11. But that's not what it's about at all, of course. It's him trying to get over the fact that his father died when he was so young. So amazing stuff. But those two songs were a beachhead for the band. And after those two songs were well received, Billy Joe said, I know now that we can play anything we want. And that kind of opened the
Yes.
floodgates. And so they started writing longer songs that were really mini operas, like Forever Now, which is an incredible 7-minute song. 21 Guns is not a mini opera, but it's pretty good size. But definitely, Jesus of Suburbia is a major long, another 7-8 minute song that is incredible. It's got like several parts to it. And again, they just kept upping the ante. And they came out with American Idiot, which was kind of like in itself, that whole album's like a mini opera. And then they followed up with Revolution Radio, and it's got Forever Now on it and some other stuff. And that's a little bit like one too. So they are now, entering kind of the Who territory with
Right. The rock opera
mini
stuff.
rock opera. Yeah. And it's kind of exciting. In fact, if you listen to some of their stuff, American Eulogy or Forever Now is another example, you'll feel a little Who in there. And I would point out one other similarity that they have with the Who. Is very interesting is if you listen to the Who, they kind of have that Anglican Church influence. A lot of their chord progressions, a lot of what they do are very hymn kind of derived, and then they throw in a little licks of R&B to kind of jazz it up a little bit. But basically, if you look at their song, and also the way they sing, there's no vibrato. These are very straight, solid tones. Very Anglican, in my opinion. So that's another thing that the Who and Green Day have in common. They are not soul singers. They're punk rock singers. So they either yell, or when they do sing, they're straight notes. They're loud and clear. And so that's kind of the interesting aspect of listening to these guys. If you get one or more of those guys playing with an R&B or a soul group or anything like that, they are a fish out of water. They don't really have those licks. They don't have the same timing. They don't have the same voice fluctuations and whatever. None of that. They're just what you see is what you get. And that's their whole thing. People say, how did you last so long? And why do you guys look so young? That's the other thing they get asked all the time. And they say, we are just completely honest about our music. We don't try to be someone we're not. We don't try to sing someone else. We sing from our hearts. And they do. Well, and they did a pretty good job.
Well, you mentioned the covers. That, I think, is one thing I look at. I that means that they get the respect of the music industry. When you have other people wanting to you know, to basically sing your songs.
Yes.
The other thing I look for that this group has is collaboration. Mm. And I, you see that at points in their career, particularly Billy Joe, has you know, teamed up with other artists in order to come up with little projects and albums, etc. Perhaps the one that kind of caught my interest the most was his collaboration on Everly Brothers songs with Norah Jones. That's kind of off the beaten track. And when you think that they, you know, and these Everly Brothers songs they did were not mainstream Everly Brothers songs. These were more country and Western type stuff, which is kind of then saying, well, it's not like taking Everly Brothers, but it's taking a little kind of a side journey on even the Everly Brothers.
Yeah.
And as I've told you before, this might sound a little facetious, but the fact is I really like Norah Jones because I figure if she's a girlfriend of Ted the Bear in the movie, she's got to be pretty good. I mean, because Ted hangs with the right people.
That's
and
right. Ted
he's
knows
hanging
what's
with
going
Norah,
on.
And then Norah hangs with Billy Joe. I think we got ourselves a nice connection there.
Yeah, 2 degrees of separation. That's good enough for me.
I'll go with you.
Ted. Ted rules, of course. We know that. The TED Talks are named after him. Not many people know that, but anyway. So, This is all goodness, and I love the. If you've listened to any of that album, their harmonies are really beautiful. Those two together
are
really excellent. And Billy Joe really branched out in the last decade. Now, halfway through the last decade of his performances, he did hit a real dark spot. You hear about the schedule these guys have and the work they're doing. They came back from a tour one time, and they just couldn't stop. So they went into the studio, and they recorded three albums, Uno, Duo, and Tre. And this is kind of unheard of. And so they were like revving. They were in the red line. Let's just put it that way. If you've got yourself, you know, one of these little things in your car where you can tell how many RPMs you got going, they were revving a little high. So then they went on a tour and everything. And as predictable, you know, about 4 or 5 years ago, to keep going like that, Billy Joe's an insomniac. So he had to take pills to go to sleep. Then he had to take pills to wake up.
Dear.
And then so he's got a backpack he goes around with. And he said at one point he had so many pills in his backpack that he sounded like it sounded like a musical instrument, like those Spanish maracas.
They said
he sounded like maracas walking around. And the drugs are so confusing when you take them, you take the wrong ones. So, you know, he was headed for, you know, the grave, really. And so he got to the point where, you know, he had a... Four even had a meltdown on stage. One time he urinated on stage. Several times he took off all clothes on stage. He was unraveling at a pretty fast clip. And finally, Mike Dirnt took him aside and said, look, you're taking some time off. And you're going into
intervention.
Rehab.
Intervention. Sounds
yeah,
good.
Yeah, you're going into rehab. And we'll talk afterwards and see if we're going to keep doing this. Because I'm not game for this. And Mike Dirnt is his brother. I mean, these two guys came
these
up together.
These guys been hanging for Prince school times, you know.
Yeah, well, both of them, Mike Dirnt ended up getting transferred to this school, and so did Billy Joe. They were strangers. They were both class clowns, and they decided to collaborate as class clowns. And they found out they both loved music. And Billy Joe's been playing and recording since he was 5 years old, trained musician, actually. And so he, you know, they really got on well, and in fact, you know, Mike learned a lot of guitar and totally learned the bass from Billy Joe and learned how to sing harmony and all that stuff from Billy Joe. And poor old Mike was an orphan and he had been put out to the foster homes. And he was in a foster home in Rodeo where Billy Joe lived. And his foster parents split up and the foster mom, who had custody of him, sort of said, I'm getting out of here. And he said, I'm not. I'm hanging with Billy Joe. And he went over to the Armstrong's house, who was down one father, single mom, and said, Mrs. Armstrong, can I stay in the garage? And they got six kids. And
wow.
He said, yeah. And she said, yeah. So this just shows you the heart of the band. That is the heart of the band right there. You know, they understand what ordinary people go through. And they write about it. They sing about it. And their main thing that I get out of Green Day is they look at the shittiest stuff, the darkest moments in their lives and anybody else's lives, and just smirk, laugh, or give it the finger. That is their trademark. That's the punk thing. That's the punk ethos. Whether they're singing like The Who or they're singing like The Clash, it doesn't matter. That is their thing, and that's what I get out of them, because I'm in a spot where I need to do that. I wanted to get me some of that. I started a campaign about a week ago where I want to meet Billy Joe Armstrong at Wrigley Field in Chicago when I'm with my brother, who the last time we attended a concert together was 1966, where we watched the Beatles in Busch Stadium, another baseball park. So we want to recreate that, and this is a pilgrimage for me. I want to shake the man's hand. He really got me through some tough times. And I wrote an article about it on Medium, if you want to look at it. It's called I Want a Better Way to Die. That's a good article, I think. Open letter to Billy Joe, asking him for a meetup, giving him some of the details of my journey without getting too boorish. And so that's been the campaign. A lot of people have gotten behind it. And it turns out my daughter has some showbiz connections. And so she's used those to get this in front of people. And just yesterday afternoon, John, I'm happy to report that Pamela, one of Rose's closest, oldest friends from college, who works for Disney Studios, asked me for my contact information because someone from Green Day is going to get a hold of me.
Jeez.
How about that shit?
Well, one of the good things we got going for us is Green Day plays a concert on August 21 in Cleveland. They don't play in Chicago till August 24. So I'm anticipating that, you know, no disrespect to Cleveland, they might hang at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame for a while. But my best guess is that they're going to be getting to Chicago sooner than later. And so that might give us a little opening in terms of time-wise, give us some space by which we don't necessarily have to get this meetup taking place, you know, just minutes before they go on stage, but perhaps even maybe a day or two beforehand.
Right.
But the bottom line is that, you know, what we're doing now is we're giving you what we call the pre-concert podcast.
Yes.
And what's going to happen is that we're going to have the post-concert podcast.
Mm.
And that's one that we need to let everybody know. Again, we talked about it at the beginning of the show, and I just want to kind of give you as a means of information a little bit about the venue in which we are going to be recording live our podcast next Saturday. The venue is going to be the Clark Street Alehouse Beer Garden at 2 o'clock Saturday afternoon, August 26th.
That is correct.
Now, the Clark Street Alehouse is located at 742 North Clark. If you're in Chicago or familiar with it, it's just south of the Chicago Avenue. It's easily accessible by means of public transportation, either by taking the Red Line to the Chicago stop or the Brown Line to the Chicago stop or the Clark 22 bus. The Clark Street Alehouse is a world-renowned, critically, internationally acclaimed, award-winning drinking emporium. That's about the best way I can just succinctly describe it. It has won awards. It's considered one of the best beer bars in Chicago. Fact is that it has a very good space. They have no food, but that doesn't mean that they don't welcome people to bring in pizzas or whatever they want to. They'll give you a stack of menus, you know, thick stack of menus you can look through. They'll recommend places for you to cart food in from. But the fact that they have no food also provides the opportunity for a lot of to increase their customer base to include four-legged critters.
Correct.
So as a result, there are a lot of pooches come in there, a lot of dogs, friendly animals. In fact, quite often, the first thing you're greeted with is not person, but the warm paw of a wonderful animal there to make you feel comfortable at the Clark Street Alehouse. It's a, I would call it I would call it a place that all the whole world, when they're in Chicago, meets at the Clark Street Ale House, but it's a neighborhood bar. It has both
sure.
elements of that. So you're going to find a lot of regulars. I find my way out there occasionally to, have a beverage of sorts. And in addition to the fact that it has a reputation of having an incredible amount of good spirits, over 300 different kinds of whiskey, bourbon, scotches. So if you're a connoisseur of good liquor, you can easily find something to satisfy your taste. If you like beer, they have 24 handles and over 120 different types of cans. And when it comes to their handles, there is no crap on their tap.
Ooh.
Strictly put, American craft beer, usually turning over handles with the latest beers, a lot of local beers that people come out of their way to come there and say, well, what do you have that we haven't had before? We're from out of town. If that's your... And the fact is that this place is located in the trendy River North section of downtown Chicago, which is just a couple of blocks away from Michigan Avenue. So it's got an enormous amount of tourists come into the place. It's also a 4 o'clock bar. So it opens up during the week at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, closes at 4 in the morning, except on Saturdays, which stays open till 5. So if you're a midnight prowler, this might be
wow.
the place for you to also consider going. A lot of industry. In fact, the place gets real crowded around 2 o'clock when a lot of the other bars close and the industry
That's right.
kind of finds a way of congregating itself in the ale house. So it always seems to be a place that's jumping. So that's where we're going to do it.
Let me just point out that, I haven't had a drink since 1971, but I like it there. Everyone made me feel welcome. There's not a bunch of crazy drunks or anything like that. It's very nice. The dogs, I think, keep everyone on their best behavior, a theory of mine anyway. And I like it. They had good coffee. So even if you're not a drinker and you want to show up, I think you'll feel comfortable. So I want to throw that out there too. And why aren't we talking to Jeremy about a sponsorship? I think we deserve a sponsorship at this point. Don't you?
Well, I'll talk to Jeremy about it. You can give me details and I'll run it by him. I'm sure he'll...
I was half kidding, but anyways.
No, they've been nice enough. In fact, they've one thing that's happened is a couple of years ago, the owners of the ale house sold it to another group that also has a couple of nightclubs. The good news is they've done very little. All changes they've done to the ale house, almost all of them, have been to upgrade and make the place a little bit nicer. We used to say with the previous owners that the previous owners were so what you call hands off that the place basically survived the ownership. It was incredible. It was just a great place. Now what we find is that what they've done in a lot of improvement is where we're going to actually do our podcast, and that's going to be out in the beer garden.
That's
where
correct.
They've done a great job of. You could go to their website, ClarkStreetAlehouse.com, and take a look at some of the pictures of where we're going to be hanging. And we'd really like, and if, particularly if you're a fan of the of Green Day, and you actually even better if you've maybe been to the concert we're going to or another concert, and would like to give your reaction, we'd
That's
be
right.
more than welcome to hear any comments that you have to make because we
Come
know
on
it's
the air
gonna
with
be,
us, right?
Yeah, that's the idea.
We're gonna pull guys in. Brett, your buddy Brett, the encyclopedia is gonna be there.
We got some of the regulars coming in. We've also got the barkeep. For that day, Kasha, who's been working there for 12 years, who basically is considered, she serves the dogs better than she does the owners.
Ooh.
She is the most dog-friendly bartender I've ever seen.
Dogs
just love Kasha. So we're going to have Kasha on, and she can give us her read on a variety of things. She's a wonderful woman who everybody, many, many people come in just to see her. And I know that the dog crowd, really enjoys her presence.
I think I'd qualify as a dog. I'm not going to be drinking. I've been neutered. So I think I qualify as a dog. Maybe she'll treat me well.
Perhaps if you get on all fours, you'll get yourself a dog biscuit.
Will she pat me?
Yeah. Like I said, I hope Chicago can survive my brother, Jerry.
Well, I've only been arrested there once, John. Let's just put it that
yeah,
way.
Yeah, I know.
And Mom, by the way, we talked to mom this last week, and of course, you know, she goes, "You're going up to Chicago?" I said, "Yeah." "Don't get into any trouble, and don't get your brother into any trouble."
Yeah, it's like, I will not get in any trouble. If there's any trouble caused, it's caused by my brother. So I've already comforted my mom that my brother is going to work very, very hard at being at his best behavior throughout his time up here. And I will just be holding in my breath, hoping that
takes
place.
You are lying. You know you are lying. You're lying out your ass.
What?
I'll get into some controversy. It's inevitable. But anyway, let's not focus on that. Let's focus on the fact that we got a great t-shirt, shirt.thebro.show. Shirt.thebro.show. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Go there. Get yourself one of these goddamn t-shirts. They are great. And they're going to end Sunday the 27th. No more.
Collector's item.
Yeah, don't snooze. Don't lose. So, what else do we got?
Well, I just, you know, the city of Chicago, we're going to have a lot of fun. It's got a lot of stuff going for it. The weather's going to be incredibly good. The long-range forecast looks like we're going to have, you know, weather in the 70s. So it won't be like that poor Babana is going to be up there suffering in a lot of heat and humidity. It's going to be able to jump and have some fun up there on the stage.
Mm. And they're famous for getting people on stage, too. That would be interesting.
Yes, that's going to happen, we know.
Billy Joe's favorite thing is to get a kid, like a 9, 10, 11, 12-year-old kid, up on stage to play with the band. And some of those have turned out surprisingly well. And if it's a young kid, he'll just give him a guitar, the guitar he's playing. He'll just say, "It's your guitar. Go for it." Or they do a jump. They'll do a stage jump. That's another thing famous for.
Oh, yeah. That's when they get them up stage, and then they have them just jump into the audience, right?
That's it.
Yeah, I was reading about that.
We're going to see a lot of stuff there. Light shows. They got a good light show. I think they got a good sound system. Woo! I've never seen so many Marshall amps.
Well, Wrigley will treat them well. It's been well received in terms of the sound. So I think we're going to see a lot of times outdoor venues can be kind of iffy, but this one has gotten good reviews in terms of their sound quality.
Okay. So
I think we'll do good in that regard.
Well, I think that's a wrap, John. I think we did a good job.
I think we've told it like it is, and looking forward to the upcoming week. Next Wednesday, you'll be here, and the excitement will begin.
Sorry about that.
Oh, I'll be hanging in there. I'm going to be listening to a few airplanes this afternoon, and
okay.
Well, I'll be talking to you tomorrow.
Adios, John.
Okay, bye-bye.